Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Our friend Bucky Brooks is a former NFL second-round defensive back. He's a former scout, and now he's a Fox Sports and NFL Network analyst, and he is joining us here on July 5th. So, you know, these are interesting times. The NFL is rarely quiet. This is sort of a 4 to 5 week spot, maybe four, because of late July camps open up, so you get that little respite from news. But we will get news here pretty quick on Aaron Rodgers, July 27th, if he reports to camp. Now, Joy and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, that as simplistic as it is, when Tom Brady put his house up for sale, it was a tell. It was like he had made a decision with his wife, we're moving. Now, we all looked at that and thought, oh, big deal, he's got a million homes. When Aaron Rodgers joined a country club in Green Bay, I told Joy, I said, well, you only golf in Wisconsin in July, August, and September. He's not holding out of camp. You know, he's going to join, and he's going to – and that I do feel like today, Bucky, the Packers aren't budging. They're not taking calls. They're not budging, that he's coming back. That's my feeling this morning. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I felt like it was always a situation where Aaron Rodgers was going to return to the Packers. All of the leverage has always been in the Packers' court. Based on the way the contract was written, the way he is, I want to say maybe the first or second year into the extension that he recently signed, he would have to give back a tremendous amount of money. And so if the Packers could withstand the public relations nightmare that this has been over the last couple months, at some point Aaron Rodgers was going to have to make a decision whether he either wanted to retire or if he wanted to continue to play football, he'd have to play it in Green Bay. And so on the outside, as media members, we could talk about like, oh, they should let him go because he's unhappy. But the Packers know. Look, he's 37 years old. He's coming off an MVP season, even though they took Jordan Love, because at the time it appeared that maybe the end was near for Aaron Rodgers. Look, there's no pressure on them. If Jordan Love never plays, but Aaron Rodgers continues to play at this level, it was well worth the draft pick and the money that they spent to Jordan Love, because Aaron Rodgers has played at a high level at a time and at an age where you normally don't see quarterbacks play this well.
You know, it's gone, you know, for me, the NFL, when they created Hard Knocks, mostly good teams didn't have to do it. You know, if you had a rookie coach or you're a good team, you could eliminate yourself from being chosen. But yet the Cowboys now, who wouldn't have to do it, have chosen to be on Hard Knocks for the third time. And I said earlier, Bucky, they're not a terrible team and they're not a great team. They're a team in the middle where a little distraction could be the difference between 10 and 7 and 9 and 8. They're not the Chiefs. They're not the Bills. Nor are they, you know, the Jets or maybe the, you know, the Jags. What do you make of the Hard Knocks? Clearly, Jerry Jones gave it the green light. What do you make of that?
I mean, it's an for the entire month of August. If you're Jerry Jones, why wouldn't you want to have cameras all around training camp to show off one of the most popular brands in the world, the Dallas Cowboys? It's a little challenging if you're coaches, because now some of those conversations that you normally have in confidence are exposed to the world. And if you don't really represent yourself well, those things can come back to get you. Just think about the Browns and Hugh Jackson and how people have held some of those conversations against him. I think the guy who has the most pressure in this scenario is Mike McCarthy, because Mike McCarthy comes to the Cowboys after having a successful run in Green Bay, viewed as an elite, almost elite level coach. Well, now last year, we didn't see it go well. And the previous 2 years, Green Bay didn't go so well. Now you have questions about where he stands, maybe kind of in that stratosphere when it comes to top coaches. He has to show people, or he has an opportunity to show people, that he is a really good coach by looking organized, detailed, having real clear leadership qualities that come through the screen. I think this is an opportunity for him to rewrite a narrative that has recently been written about his leadership style and his coaching demeanor.
story out of New England that Mac Jones wowed everybody in the OTAs. Now, there's certain things you can't do. I mean, you get in trouble if you practice too hard or too much. I saw Urban Meyer got fined a little bit. So should I read anything into this? Is this just leaked information to make Mac Jones look like a smart pick? There's only so much you can do in these camps. What do you make of the, he wowed coaches and players?
Well, I mean, look, Mac Jones is always going to wow in this setting, right? The best thing that Mac Jones brings to the table would be his football IQ, his smarts, his ability to pick up the playbook and those things. Where Mac Jones has to show us that he really can play at a high level is when we're playing 11-on-11 football against some of the best athletes in the world. The things that he lacks, he doesn't have A-level arm strength and talent. He doesn't have improvisational ability when it comes to his athleticism when the pocket gets muddied. When we start playing real games, preseason and maybe even regular season games, that's when he'll have a chance to answer those questions. Whatever he does in practice, I won't say that you miss it, because it is positive that he understands the playbook and he understands how to get to his second and third reads and those things. But we really won't see what happens until they really start strapping up and playing games. Then we will see where he is. Because remember, as much as we talk about Trey Lance and his lack of experience, Mac Jones has the same number of collegiate starts as Trey Lance. And so we will see what that looks like when we begin to play real, real games when the regular season kicks off.
So you have given us a couple of lists, and I tend to have an addictive nature around lists. You rank the top five coach-quarterback combos under the most pressure this year. And though I mostly agree with the list, McVay, Stafford 1, Lamar, Harbaugh 2, Wentz, Reich, Carr, Gruden, Dalton, Fields, Nagy. The Lamar Harbaugh one is fascinating to me. So Lamar's won 80% of his games. He's absolutely does one thing better than anybody in the league. And I'm fascinated by this because I look at Lamar Jackson and I'm like, Tom Brady hasn't won 80% of his games. I don't feel there's a lot of pressure on Lamar. I think he's been established as a guy that can win a division. He can get you to the playoffs. He can win a playoff game. But you sense some pressure on Lamar, and where's that come from? What's the pressure?
Well, I think the pressure is because, like, look, we are a win-at-all-costs league. Like, basically, we judge people on Super Bowls and rings and titles and those things. And what you do in the regular season certainly adds perspective and really makes the narrative go. But it's about winning games. And so he has been a fantastic player. He is a fantastic player. I don't think there's anybody better at what he does. He does a great job of making plays happen with his arm, with his legs. He played at an MVP level. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to win and win in the postseason. Yes, they got that postseason win against the Tennessee Titans a year ago, but they haven't advanced. And when you look at the competitors in the division that he has to knock off, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, you think about Justin Herbert coming, Carson Wentz coming over. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have pressure to figure out if this formula that they use to be successful in the regular season, will it work in the postseason? And I'm on record saying I love how they play, but do they have the stubbornness and the arrogance to say, we're going to play the way that we play, we're not changing in the postseason, and eventually we're going to knock the door down? That is a lot of pressure to say, hey, stubbornly, this is how we play, this is who we are, we're not changing. Can they do it? And also, there's the added pressure of once you pay Lamar Jackson $40 million plus, which I think is what it has to be to get him done on that contract deal, how does the team change with Lamar Jackson making that much money? And if you're the team, do you change the way that you play to justify paying him what you have to pay him? There's a lot of pressure around the organization to figure out how do we do this and get it right? And how can we sustain what we've been able to do successfully over the last couple of years?
The other quarterback coach combo that made the list is Derek Carr and John Gruden. And I've said this when he got hired, I said he's been a television star for a decade. There are certain industries, tech and the NFL, you take a decade off, it feels like 30 years. The league, tech's constantly changing. And is the pressure on Carr, or is the pressure on Gruden, because the last 2 years they've gone man overboard post-Thanksgiving? If this team, and I still think it's a weak roster, and Gruden's largely shaped it, if this team is 8-9 this year, 9-8, why is the pressure on Derek Carr? Why is it not on John Gruden?
Well, I mean, it's on both of them. Now, when we think about John Gruden, certainly it hasn't been what we thought it would be since he's returned to the Raiders. This is a team that has underperformed, and he has rebuilt this team. And 3-4 years into a run, we should start seeing this team play at a playoff level. They've given us moments, but they haven't gotten over the hump. For Derek, I think the big thing with Derek Carr is Derek Carr has had 1 year where he was playing at an MVP level, and then he broke his leg. And since then, he's been good, not great. His deal is about to come up. And when we think of the prices that we're having to expend on quarterbacks, are we confident that Derek Carr is a $40 million quarterback? Is he in the same category when we think about Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson and those guys who will command those kind of numbers? Or is he just a guy that's right at the middle of the pack or maybe on the edge of being a top 10 player? At some point, when you're the quarterback and an elite quarterback, you have to be able to put the team on your back regardless of the circumstances. And so now is an opportunity for Derek Carr to show us that he does have the ability to go from good to great, because this is the longest that we've seen John Gruden stick with a quarterback.
Right.
We have not seen John Gruden ever stay with a quarterback 4 or 5 years during his entire time in the National Football League. So I think there is some pressure on Derek Carr to prove not only to us on the outside, but to prove to John Gruden that he is the guy that can get them to the next level.
By the way, you also had your top five Batman and Robin duos in the NFL. I didn't have any problem with any of it. I think Lavonte David and Devin White, and maybe it's recency bias, I'd probably have them maybe a spot higher. I never, you know, Marcus Peters, two great coaches have moved off Marcus Peters, Andy Reid and Sean McVay. I always worry about that. It'd be like a great employer moving off a so-called great employee. After a couple, two or three times, you're like, maybe it's the employee, it's not the employer. Other than that, yeah, I kind of like it. I do kind of like it. You know, it's interesting. How many touches can you give Kareem Hunt now? Because Nick Chubb is so great. You know, it's
Yeah, no, I think with both of those guys, first about the Marcus Peters thing, going all the way back when Marcus Peters was coming out of University of Washington, I had a DB coach tell me, hey, it takes a wolf to coach a wolf, meaning that it takes someone with a strong personality to be able to deal with another strong personality. In Baltimore, the reason why it works for Marcus Peters is because they're so accustomed to having these different personalities on their team. They don't really blink at him when he barks back or whatever. Like, that's kind of a part of how they've been built on. In Cleveland, the Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt thing is really interesting to me because you have Baker Mayfield, who was playing for a big time extension. Yeah. But when you look at this team is built around their running game, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and then some of the auxiliary pieces that they have on the outside. As long as the Browns are able to control the game with the running game, man, they can beat anybody in the league. And one of the reasons why they are legitimate Super Bowl contenders is because they have two number one running backs that can get it done. So if you do have a short-term absence with Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt can carry the load. I think this is a team whose magic number is always 35. When they get the 35 rushing attempts, they're going to win games. And I don't care how you divvy between the two, 35 is the magic number for them. It's a winning recipe that has worked successfully for them.
Great seeing you, Bucky Brooks, on a Monday. Thanks so much for taking time for us in this holiday weekend and this holiday week. Thanks, man.
Hey, appreciate you.
Yeah, the Gruden situation's, you know, it's just people forget, man, he left football, like coaching football for a decade, and the game totally changed. I don't like their personnel a ton. I really don't. I just think, you know, I'll give you, I always say, you watch Bill Parcells. He went to a 1-15 Dolphins team as general manager. He wasn't even the coach. They won 11 games the next year, 11-5. Why? Because Bill basically turned over 35% of the roster. I'm not going to give you, you don't get that much time with me anymore. Everybody's willing to make a trade. The college football players, now that college and pro football look more similar, these quarterbacks come in now. They can play. I mean, they can play. So you don't have to sit a guy on the bench. So it's like, it's just, I'm not going to give you as much time as I used to give you to rebuild a roster. I'll give you 2 years, but this is my line always for all sports. The first year, Nick Saban at Alabama lost to Louisiana Monroe in his first year. First year, not only are you building a roster, you're building a culture. But by the middle of year two in any sport, I've got to watch you and go, oh, they're tightening things up. Oh, they've gotten faster. Oh, boy, they're really well coached. You have to win games. Even if you lose, do you lose competitively? And you go to Alabama's second year, you were like, okay, it's a real football team. They've gotten really physical. I'm 3 years into this Gruden thing. I still don't like the roster. And I, outside of running the football well, what do they do?
Well, got 7 years to go.
I don't know.
So it doesn't matter. I mean, that's part of the trade-off when you sign someone to a contract like that. There is not the same amount of pressure. You're not going to pay John Gruden not to coach for 5 years.
So far, would you say it's working or not working?
I mean, I don't... It's afloat, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I think that they need to take a significant step up this year. I don't love all the roster moves that they've made, but what are the standards? I think each organization has a different standard. Are they relevant?
I'll tell you what.
Are they getting better every single year?
I'll tell you what. If Aaron Rodgers went to Denver and the Broncos pulled the trigger, that's the fourth best team in that division. It's already the fourth best roster. Denver's got a better roster. So it's the fourth best roster. So to me, it's float, leaning, not floating.
I think they had... He had a lot of space, big bumper in the beginning because of the contract and coming back in and sad organization.
I get it.
And then last year was maybe again another year of not so much pressure because they weren't in the stadium. I think things kick into a different gear this year.
Like to me, this year's got to be...
You're going to have fans in the stands.
I want to see...
that new stadium.
I want to see 10 wins. 10-7's not a great record. I need 10 wins. You got a quarterback that's good enough to win 10 games. That's what I got to see.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Stan Van Gundy was fired after just one season as coach of the Pelicans. There were reports that Zion Williamson and his family were unhappy with him, which contributed to the team's decision to fire him. But Van Gundy doesn't believe that the reports that Zion was upset had anything to do with it. He said, I don't know anything about that. In my mind, I liked coaching Zion. I had a good relationship with him. If they were unhappy, I didn't hear about it. Zion was unhappy with us not winning more games, but Zion never expressed any of that to me. That doesn't mean he wasn't unhappy. I know this. Regardless of what happened in that regard, Zion is no coach killer.
Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Right. And reportedly, it wasn't just Zion that was unhappy with Van Gundy's coaching style. Might not be that relatable to younger players. He's, you know, reportedly a little more aggressive. And they went 31-41. But Van Gundy aside, this is why I think while the Luka situation and the Zion situations have similarities in the amount of pressure that is on the organization, the Pelicans, people being mad about this report about his family not being happy with Zion being there and all of that, like, this is Zion's third coach, this new hire that they're going to make in 3 years.
It's a mess. Yeah, this is...
The third coach in 3 years.
Chris Paul wanted out.
I don't want to hear anything about Zion at all. If you have had to fire and hire three coaches in 3 years when you have Zion Williamson on your team, it is on you. That is not Zion. And then I think that's what Van Gundy is saying. Like, Zion's not out here saying, you know, you need to fire and hire these guys. Like, these are your decisions to make.
Yeah, and also Anthony Davis and Chris Paul didn't want to be there. So it's the third star that's like, listen, it's run and owned by the Benson family, who are terrific NFL owners, and they run a very button-down NFL operation. The Saints are... They draft as well as anybody. When you look at the Saints, you're like, oh, that's well run. That Russell Wilson puts that in the group. That's well run. When you look at the Pelicans, that's not what you think. So it's very hard to be great at two things. It's the same thing for ownership. Find me all the owners. Oh, it's a magnificent baseball owner, and he's the best NBA owner.
Well, you only have so much time and energy to devote to those things. Now, that's not to say that just because you own one team, you're necessarily a great owner, because we have seen lots of owners who only own one team who are disasters because they're spending too much time and they're meddling and obsessing over things that they shouldn't even be involved in. So I think balance is important, but consistency is crucial for young players. This is when they develop. This is when they learn how to be pros. This is when they learn how to win. And if you have this constant turnover at what is arguably the most important role in a young player's career, which is their head coach.
Yeah.
what do you expect? Do you expect everyone to just be happy with the situation? I didn't like the pushback on Zion. Like, I understand it came from his family, didn't come from him. And generally, we associate what families say with the player is unhappy, which is why it's dangerous sometimes for families to get involved. But it's like, dude, he's had three coaches. He didn't make those moves. What do you expect from him? We're already saying that he has the potential to be the face of the league, and he can't even get a consistent message from the front office. So we're going to be paying attention to the Jaguars a lot this year with Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer. There's some expectations. I don't think they're unrealistic, but some expectations with Trevor and Urban there. Obviously, they're hoping to do better than they did last year, which was 1-15. And wide receiver DJ Chark thinks that Jacksonville is poised for a big jump this year. He said the guys that came in from a lot of winning programs, so we're trying to develop that winning culture and just camaraderie here. I think we're going to shock a lot of people. I'm not one of those people that's huge on setting record goals or anything like that or saying how many wins or losses we're going to have, but I think we're going to be an exciting football team for sure.
They'll score points, 6-10, 6-11.
Well, the Foxbet has their over-under at 6.5.
I would probably go under, but I don't think it's going to be. I think, you know, that division's weird. What if they beat Tennessee once and Houston twice and got three wins, which is very. I don't think they can match up with the Colts. But I mean, again, what you're looking for in year one with Urban, we should be able to watch them and go, okay, there's something.
Yes.
And I think what you'll see with them is offensively, they're pretty clever. If we just saw that, if they were 6-11, but we were like, you know what? They lose some shootouts, but it's like, by the way, Carolina last year. They're interesting,
right?
But they just don't have the defensive personnel. They face a Kansas City they can't stop. Like, I think 6-11, but you see something developing is totally fair for them.
Well, they went 1-15 last year,
That's
so
right.
6-11 is a massive improvement in your first year and in Urban's first year coaching in the NFL and Trevor Lawrence's rookie year, which he signed his rookie contract today, actually. But to your point about the division, that's what's interesting to me. I don't know what to expect from the Texans this year. We know Deshaun Watson is great, but
they're not going to be very good.
What's happening with that? David Culley is his first year coaching. Obviously, we know what Tennessee is capable of, but like, could they steal a game in division from Tennessee? Sure. And, you know, we're interested in what Frank Reich and Carson Wentz are going to be. And obviously, the Colts have a great roster, probably the best roster in the division. But it's Carson Wentz in a new situation. How's that going to play out? So there are a lot of question marks within the division still.
Jags beat the Colts last year. So that's a division where, you know, they could go 8-9 and you look at it and they got, you know, four wins in division and it's like.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're a wild card team or anything. I'm just saying I could see them taking this big jump that DJ is talking about just with the division only. So the Chargers have Justin Herbert, a new star this season, coming back in his second year after winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. And new head coach Brandon Staley is taking full advantage of Herbert's talent, saying the offense revolves around Justin Herbert.
I wanted our offense to run through Justin Herbert. I wanted him to make it work. And I think that that's what's been fun to sort of get started. But I think that ultimately, those are the most dangerous quarterbacks that you defend, where the quarterback becomes the system.
Kind of interesting. They've made a lot of aggressive moves this offseason.
Offensive line will be massively upgraded. The Browns secondary and the Chargers O-line are the most improved units in the NFL, and because of that, they feel like playoff teams.
I can't wait to watch Justin Herbert in his second year. Now, look, he won Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. He was spectacular. It is a new head coach. There are a lot of changes. I do think that, to your point, the offensive line is much better. So I don't know what our expectations should be of him, because it's still, you know, tough division. But I'm really excited to see what they do with him, especially because they're to Brandon's point, they're fully leaning in on him now.
God, he's just fun to watch. He's got a huge arm, big body, can run. His highlights, I just don't get sick of. And, you know, with a lot of these highlights, what you notice is he's under duress. A second and a half after the ball.
He's very cool. He has that kind of that Patrick Mahomes quality where a little Russell Wilson-ness, where it starts to get hectic and he doesn't look like he's panicking.
Yeah.
Like some quarterbacks are just like their legs start going everywhere. Like that's just not how he is under pressure.
Best for good stuff from Joy. Joy with the news. Best for last.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
Ten athletes going forward that will reshape America in the Herd on a Monday.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Yesterday was 4th of July, and we thought we'd give you sort of the 10 going forward for, you know, the next 5 to 10 years. The names, these are overwhelmingly, with one exception, very, very young athletes. They will be the most endorsed, the most discussed, have the largest followings on social media. They'll have the biggest endorsement deals. They'll win the most. These people will, in my opinion, sort of shape sports going forward. And no particular order, just 10 figures going forward. They're going to be here a while. And most 10 years will shape. Maybe one exception, but 10 years looks like the number of these are going to be prominent, premier, championship level, high endorsement level, social media stars, and here we go. I would start with Patrick Mahomes, 25-year-old quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. He has the highest passer rating ever. He has the highest winning percentage by any quarterback in the Super Bowl era. And he did get a bit of a break. He was coupled with probably the most creative head coach. So Andy Reid's going to let him loose and let him go. He also has a style which is really fun to watch. And that matters. He's a likable, kind of relatable, all about winning football. I think he'll be the face of the league for a long time. Fernando Tatis, 22-year-old baseball star out of San Diego. He is a once-a-decade talent. Folks, he leads the National League in everything. Home runs, slugging percentage, stolen bases. He's not a great fielder yet, but he took the Padres last season to their first playoff appearance in 22 years. And another reason he's so influential, he's fun to watch. He's dynamic in a sport which is starving for personalities, and he's a big one. How about Katie Ledecky, 24 years old? I know you're thinking to yourself, she's only 24. Yeah, I know, because she's been in the Olympics since she was 15. She's the greatest, most decorated female swimmer of all time. At age 15, she made the 2012 U.S. Olympic team. Folks, she's won 28 golds, 5 silvers, and a bronze in major international competitions. She should dominate these Olympics at 24, meaning she'll be in another Olympics down the road at, you know, 28. Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, define swimming in America. And likable, relatable, personable, and outstanding. How about Luka Doncic? We can't deny it. He's 22 years old. Magic, LeBron, and Luka are the best players I've ever seen. International basketball players now are influential in the NBA. He averages 33.5 points per game in the playoffs. That would be the most ever in league history. And he's fiery. He'll get after it. He's got a little bit of a temper. He'll let you know how he feels, and that matters. How about Christian Pulisic? 22 years old, the greatest American soccer talent of my life. His resume is not as great as Landon Donovan yet. A midfielder, played for Chelsea in the English Premier League. The best player on the U.S. men's national team. And this is important. Where our women's team dominates, our men's struggle even to qualify. And with his leadership, this is the most talented USA team in terms of young talent ever. They make the Olympics. They flourish, in the World Cup. He has a major potential impact on the number of kids playing tennis. These 13, 14-year-old kids now have a lot of choices. The more that play soccer, the better it is for America. How about Brooks Koepka, 31 years old? Listen, he'll golf and be in his prime for another 10 years. A 4-time major champ, 2 U.S. Open. I think his game has depth. I think he has depth. I think he's a power golfer. in his prime for a decade. I think he's more substantive than a Bryson DeChambeau. I think he's more consistent than Dustin Johnson. He won't be Tiger Woods. Nobody would be. But the face, the look, the personality, the alpha, 10 years, I got no problems with him dominating the sport. How about Zion Williamson at 20? First of all, he's so explosive, so dynamic, so likable. The question, and I think there'll be controversy in his career, is he going to stay in New Orleans? It is a chaotic organization. Zion Williamson, youngest player in league history with consecutive games, 30 points, at least 70% shooting percentage. A Russell Wilson, 32 years old, has to be involved. I know he's 32. Russell's never had an injury. He will play to 42, folks. He's going to be a Tom Brady. He is the only quarterback in league history, first 9 years in the league, winning seasons. 8 of the 9 in the playoffs. And that's in the toughest division in football. He's not doing this in the AFC South. Josh Allen. Maybe the only thing in the league that compares to Patrick Mahomes. 6'5.5", had half their rushing touchdowns, has an insane arm. Mel Kiper said he's the 10th most talented prospect in the 40 years he's been doing the draft. He is remarkable. And how about finally Naomi Osaka, 23 years old. She is the highest paid female athlete in the world. She had a good year last year, $55 million, outspoken with Black Lives Matter and mental health awareness. She appears to be for the next 10 years, and you can't compare anybody to Serena because that's like the greatest tennis player arguably of all time. But she has sort of separated from the sport, number two ranked player in the world. There you go.
I'd add Simone Biles.
Who's gymnast?
Going? Yes. Most decorated gymnast of all time. Most dominant. And she's 24, so she'll be in another Olympics. And Sabrina Ionescu from the New York Liberty. She's already in State Farm commercials. And
I'm interested. I couldn't put Trevor Lawrence in.
We got to see what he's going to do first.
That's what I was saying. Give me 2 years to watch him. All right, we're done. Thanks for watching. Happy holidays. See you tomorrow.